What's going on, DTC friends and family? I'm here to talk to you about Dynasty Leagues, but not in the way that I usually do. No, we're not talking about the Dynasty Diagnostic. We are talking about Dynasty Owners. The best fantasy football leagues are those where every owner consistently pays attention, responds to trade offers, changes their lineup, and is always looking to improve their team. We've all been in leagues where non-active owners absolutely kill the vibe, and you don't get any enjoyment from actually participating in that league, win or lose. These aren't one of those. This is no off-season for the owners on Dynasty Owner. That's who you're challenging yourself when it comes to Dynasty Owner. Other elite fantasy football players are committed to competing and are vetted before they're even placed in Dynasty Owner leagues. It's the only football platform with a patent game using actual NFL salaries and contracts. Combine this with a salary cap, trading options, advanced team rosters, and devoted and elite owners willing to compete against you, and you're faced with the same decisions that NFL owners and general managers must make on a day-to-day basis. If you are ready to take the leap, to take the next step, and to take on the absolute creme de la creme of Dynasty gamers, then don't miss out. We have an amazing mobile app that will be out on iOS and Android in May, just in time to start filling up your draft with all the rookies being added to the player pool. Just waitlist at www.dynastyowner.com so you don't miss out when new leagues open.
Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. Bowl all bowl, but no bowl, they just roll in a roll that I'm told. Cup a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks. Yeah, I ain't changed my oil in weeks. Yeah, how'd I get a lot of these stains on my seat? Yeah, only mechanics that I trust cause it's free. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty now. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty
Diagnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. My name is Eitan Mosia. I am flanked by Sam Stompy Lane. And today we are lucky to have one of the best in the business, the king of the fantasy black book himself, Mr. Joe Bizapia. What's going on, man?
I like that. King. I'm going to keep that. I actually have a crown over here, but we turned the videos off because the stupid StreamYard is being weird. But you can picture me with the crown, with my beautiful bald head. I like that. The king. I'm gonna keep that, Eitan. I'm happy to be here talking to you guys. I always have a good time chatting football with y'all. And I don't know about you, man. I'm ready. I'm ready for this season, man. Baseball's been annoying for the last 2 months. I know they're back and all, but you know what? I feel like a scorned lover. I'm kind of annoyed at them right now, so... To me, my mindset is completely on football right now, and I'm excited to chat with you guys tonight.
Yeah, you meet to us too, man. It's been probably around a year since we last talked to you when you released the Black Book. As always, one of the, and if not the best publications out there. So if you haven't looked it up, look it up on Amazon. The Fantasy Football Black Book. It is the Fantasy Football Black Book, right?
That's correct. 2020 edition. You got it. So you can get it there on Amazon on paperback. You can also get it for Kindle, and iTunes just went up this week too. So if you want to save trees, it's fine. You can go get the digital copy, but most people like the paperback, which is kind of funny. You think like everything's digital nowadays. Nope. Yeah. People like to hold that book in their hand. They like to go leaf through it and make little notes and highlight stuff and do stuff. And that's very cool. So,
cause you look super professional when you walk in with the black book and you have like a highlighter and you're like, okay. And then you look like you're writing notes.
Drop that bad boy. It's big too. You drop it on the table. Yeah. It's like, boom. Yeah. Let's draft this some bitch. Let's do this.
Now people know you mean business.
It's funny. People have been telling me in the last couple of years that like they've gone into drafts and they'll sit there at the table, and that actually what happens. Like they'll have theirs and somebody else has the black book. And I'm like, that's wild. Like that is a great story. Or like two other guys in the league. And it's funny. Like it's becoming a thing, which is humbling and awesome. And I'm very grateful to all the readers, but every year I try to make it, you know, bigger and better. And, you know, this year we added more content. We kept it at the same price because, well, 2020 has been horrendous. So, like, why shouldn't we give people something to look forward to? That's my opinion.
Exactly. Yeah, man.
All right. So let's get into what we got going on today, which is kind of a whole heap of whatever we decide is going to happen kind of right now as we're flowing because – I mean, Joe, you mentioned that baseball's back and you feel like a scoring lever with baseball. Now we're hearing some news that football is not set in stone. It's not a done deal. We think that it is going to come back. I think we have dates and all the rest of it. But we just had some players test positive for COVID, Ezekiel Elliott being one of them. I don't think that's going to impact the season. I don't think that's going to impact when the season starts, but I mean, it just kind of tells you that, you know, this isn't over. There's a lot of things that still have to be worked out here. What's going to happen to this league we all love?
No, it's going to run through everything. It's going to look, I live in New Jersey. It ran through here pretty damn bad. Where I was kind of in the epicenter right outside of New York City here. It was us in New York basically. And, it's going to go through the population, and it's just something you have to understand. I think the NFL is in a unique position, which is way easier than Major League Baseball, because Major League Baseball is trying to play every day. The NFL is trying to play once a week, which makes it a whole lot easier to manage the players, manage what's going on, manage the facilities. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to have players continue to test positive, but what happens is you're going to continue to test players early because you're going to make sure you find the people that test positive. You're going to have them quarantine for a certain number of days, and they're making some progress already with some of these things. There are actually some talk about 2020 by the end of the year, even having a vaccine. So that would be fantastic. We'll see if that comes to fruition, but whether it does or not, the treatments have stepped up considerably over the last, you know, 2 months or so in the medical field. And this is something like now we have to pay attention to, and it's completely out of our hands. Like this is not a hamstring. This is not, you know, somebody's got a bad knee that, you know, has got a bad knee. It's not that. This is something that you're never going to be able to predict, but you have to prepare for. And I think what you have to do is pay more attention this year to the way you draft your bench than ever before. You know, you might, instead of like taking flyers on guys that are never going to play, you might want to take some guys that you think have a real shot to play or could be useful if they get playing time, and just be more aware of that. I'm not one for handcuffing running backs all the time. Some people always live and die by that. I'm not one of those people, but this year might be one of those years where you might tend to at least look for some of those guys where, I'll give you, for instance, like a Latavius Murray and an Alvin Kamara who might get hurt anyway. You know, like somebody like that. Like Latavius Murray has stepped in before when Dalvin Cook was hurt. He stepped in before when Alvin Kamara missed time. And that Saints offense is going to yield a lot of yards regardless. So those kind of guys, you know, in the 10th round, I think those kind of guys are worth speculating on at least this year for sure. And they might be better investments than the guy who isn't going to see playing time that you're just taking because it's the sexy new name.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I mean, we got to kind of be wary of rookies. Already, rookie wide receivers face a little bit of a learning curve. Rookie tight ends, I mean, that's neither here nor there. That's another conversation entirely in terms of what they need to do to get ready to play in the NFL. Running back tends to translate, and luckily we've been blessed with a number of running backs that we hope can contribute in day one. But, I mean, it's going to be tough just not necessarily having coaches that know exactly what their players can do, the new ones, because of the lack of time spent together and of time spent working with these players over the offseason. So it's going to be interesting to see maybe some of the better younger guys to buy this year isn't necessarily looking at rookies, but looking at guys who were rookies last season and are looking to take that next step because at least they have some NFL experience under their belts and some experience with the coaching staffs that already are in place. So let's kind of talk about some of the guys that we think might be interesting going into the 2020 season. Obviously, Daniel Jones kind of flattered to deceive a little bit last year. He had a few big games. He had a few really, really kind of ball out performances, but he also struggled with turnovers. He struggled with fumbles particularly. He also was not necessarily ever really in a situation where he had his full offense available to him. Evan Ingram has been injured off and on. The rest of the receivers in that offense, other than Darius Slayton, dealt with their own swaths of injuries. So I want to start with you, Sam. What do you think that Giants team is going to be this year? And is Daniel Jones a guy that you'd be looking to acquire?
So they get Saquon back, which is obviously back and healthy, which is obviously the biggest boon they have. But I think people aren't really taking into account that Mike Shula and Pat Shurmur are gone. They have that the pair of those, especially over, let's just say, the last 5 years, have made some QBs look fantastic. I mean, Sam Bradford had his best career season in Minnesota. Case Keenum did too. And then they move over to New York and well, they had Eli Manning and not much else. I mean, a twilight Eli Manning and not much else behind him. The next year, I mean, Daniel Jones, I think we were all very – or most of us were very skeptical of him going at, what, 105, 106? Can't remember where exactly he went. Anyway, in the first round, but especially in the top 10 picks, and he actually had a decent season to make people intrigued by him coming into year two. But now they're in Denver – and I just don't know what you are really expecting from Jason Garrett, because it's not like over the last 5-6 years, he's been fantastic as a head coach in terms of the offense. I mean, their passing attempts and passing yards were all like bottom half of the season, except for last season when Dak just was on fire. But even before that, he had Tony Romo. So I don't know how much actual development you can attribute to Jason Garrett. So I just don't know what to expect from Daniel Jones under Jason Garrett is my issue.
What about you, Jeff?
Well, you know, for me, I look at Daniel Jones, and this was a guy that has a lot of weapons. There's few guys out there that have three wide receivers, a tight end, and an all-world running back, all of which are fantasy relevant and useful and have some sort of appeal. So the fun fact about Daniel Jones is there was not one game last year where he had all of those weapons at the same time on the field. So right off the bat, I'm looking for some improvement there. And if you look at the games where he had Saquon and the games where he didn't, and I always do all the quarterback write-ups for the Black Book every year. That's kind of my jam. I'm Mr. Superflex. So, you know, he's a very exciting quarterback because in terms of fantasy, he's in a lot of ways like Romo, like maybe a better fantasy quarterback potentially eventually down the line than a real quarterback. But I think surprised a lot of people last year. And if you look at the game log of the games where he had Saquon in terms of the fantasy points he scored, night and day to the ones he didn't. So really his value is tied to Saquon even more than Garrett. And Stompy makes a great point there about, you know, well, we don't know what Garrett's going to be. And it's always difficult for young quarterbacks to learn a playbook and have to learn a new one. But I think Garrett actually might be better suited to this role than as head coach. I really do. And I'm looking at him as a really strong high-end QB2 in Superflex. He's a positive in terms of relative position value, which is our, you know, little simple measurement in the Black Book, which tells you, you know, how much better a player is than the next player, which is really a strategy. So what it is, you know, tiers, but it's quantified rankings with tiers. And it's not just, oh, I like this guy more than this guy. You're like, well, who gives a crap? That doesn't help anybody. How much, what's the difference between them? How can he quantify? You tell me how much better a player is. And Daniel Jones is a QB2. Is about plus 4 or 5% better than the average quarterback QB2 in a Superflex league. And I think there's some upside there. I think he was better than a lot of people realize. And I think the Giants made some improvements. They had a good draft. And I would say this, I think the O-line's improved. They got rid of some dead weight on that O-line. I think that's going to help things a lot. I think the Giants are a better football team than the Jets. I'll say it right now, and I'll say it again, and I think they're going to have a better record when all is said and done.
I 100% agree with that. I was actually going to go on a little bit of a tangent with the Giants offensive line. Andrew Thomas was one of the best tackles in a tackle-heavy draft.
Yeah.
And the Giants got him early. Last year, the Giants offensive line was pretty awful. Any way you look at it, looking at in terms of adjusted line yards, so how that line affected Saquon Barkley, and also how that line affected Daniel Jones. Say what you will about sacks being a quarterback stat, I do understand that there is some culpability to holding the ball too long, not making good decisions that lead to some turnovers and lead to some sacks. I get that. But at the same time, the Giants were 25th overall last season in terms of adjusted line yards at just 3.96 per clip, 25 out of 32 teams. In terms of their total adjusted sack rate production, they were a bottom 10 squad, probably a bottom 8 squad in terms of adjusted sack rate, getting a sack at, let's see, just about, where did that go?
Well, while you're looking for that stat,
7.1, sorry, go ahead.
You know, I'll say while you're looking for that stat, well, I'll tell you is also, you know, the thing that's going to help as well. You know, we all know that Daniel Jones turned the ball over in terms of fumbles more than anybody else. That's a problem. I know he's working on that this offseason in terms of ball control and taking care of the football better. But at the same time, the offensive line goes a long way in helping that too. When you're under less pressure, you make less bad decisions with the football. So, I mean, that's, you know, you're not getting hit as much. It's a big difference. So I think what you saw out of him was a little bit of maneuverability last year too, and awareness that it's, you know, look, protecting the football is something he's got to get better at. It's not something you want. You don't want to give up drives and give up fantasy points by fumbling the way the football.
Absolutely. It was 7.1%, the adjusted sack rate for the New York Giants last season, which wasn't absolutely terrible, but definitely was not in the top half of the NFL. So we hope that Andrew Thomas will definitely add to that. I think that coupled with hopefully a more healthy season from Evan Ingram and more of a healthy season from the wide receivers on that team, like Joe mentioned, if he can actually play with the full team available to him, then we'll start to see, I think, something that we can at least like in fantasy circles, whether or not that translates to wins directly for the New York Giants moving into the new season.
Well, yeah. And I think you have to also, like Joe brought up, that Daniel Jones's numbers were far better with Saquon. Saquon is another route running weapon, but he's also a dump down option, so he doesn't have to hold on to the ball. And I would say he's a decent enough blocker where he can help in pass protection too. So the addition of Saquon is going to also help with those sack numbers, because they have to take Saquon into account now, because and he's one of the best running backs in the game.
All right, so let's talk about some unexpected news that, I mean, this happened a while ago. I guess people kind of understand what is going on now, but this was not necessarily something that we expected to see. Sammy Watkins stays put. He is now going to, for the foreseeable future, be the wide receiver two for the Patrick Mahomes-led Kansas City Chiefs offense. Obviously, this stifles the growth of somebody that we had a lot of hope for in Mecole Hardman. The restructured contract, I think, has Sammy with the team for the foreseeable future. Do we think that there is still a pathway for a guy like Hardman to grow into becoming reliable, at least, you know, one of those deep threats that can win you a couple weeks a season this year, as early as this year?
Oh, I definitely think so. I've never been a Sammy Watkins guy. I'm not going to start now. And I'll tell you what, you know, the problem is whoever that guy's going to be, it's going to be the fourth option at best in the offense anyway, because you're going to have Hill and Kelsey, and then, of course, you're going to have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and then there's a fourth. So how much can that fourth person eat? I don't know, but I think Mecole Hardman, at the very least, is going to be a very interesting tournament DFS guy. In terms of season-long, it's a little trickier, because I don't know what kind of target volume he's going to get. I think that, you know, although that Kansas City defense played better in the second half last year, all the way to the Super Bowl, and they did have some really good moments there in the playoffs, I still think it's not perfect defense. So there's certainly, I mean, if you look all the way back, you know, to that game against the Texans in the playoffs, you know, they did not get off to a good start there. But I think that when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, I think they are a team that's going to have to continue to score. That's a good thing for guys volume like Mecole Hardman. And if I had to pick between him and Watkins, I'll take the upside with the younger guy, because I think they might find ways to get Mecole Hardman the football, because speed kills in this league. And that's something that guy's got in spades, man. Let me tell you, him, Tyreek Hill, I don't know how you defend those two guys at the same time. It's going to be a nightmare. And look, Sammy Watkins, he had that one big game last year in week one, and all the Sammy Watkins truthers came out of nowhere. It came out of the woodwork. And then after week two, you never heard from him again. And that's, I'm sorry. I'm not there. I'd rather take a shot on Mecole Hardman.
Early in his career, Tyreek Hill was used often as a running back in the Kansas City Chiefs offense. I think Mecole Hardman can kind of be used in the same way. I like what you said about the Chiefs being the type of team that is going to be creative enough to get Mecole Hardman the ball. That doesn't even necessarily mean through the air. They'll find a creative way, whether it's a dump-off pass, whether it's an end-around. They'll find ways to get him involved in gadget plays that I think are going to lead to big points every now and then.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. They're going to find ways to get him the football, and those are the kind of touches you're going to look for. But in terms of like consistency in fantasy football, like you just have to realize that there's just better options in that offense. And it's not a knock on Mecole Hardman. It's just, it's going to be very difficult to predict. There's going to be a couple big games, I'm sure, but on a week-to-week basis, it could be frustrating. So I think there's better week-to-week options. That's why what I'd be doing is more using him in the DFS world, where I can pick matchups where I know there's a really weak corner in a certain spot that he's going to be lined up against, and try to take advantage of those moments. And that way, at least I know. And it's, again, it's more of a tournament play than a cash game play as well.
By the way, I noticed that you mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire and did not mention Damian Williams. So let's start this bone. So I guess I'm on the side of, I like Edward CAH's talent. I love that he had a 55 pass catch. There you go. 55 catch season last season.
Receptions.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not like Damian Williams didn't do anything into the playoffs, right? I mean, like towards the end of the season into the playoffs, and he did it the previous season as well. He had some injuries last year as well. But, I mean, I guess I'm on the side of, I think Damian Williams will still get, I'll say significant, but it doesn't imply necessarily like, oh, he's going to get 60%, but 40% of the touches plus. I definitely think that will happen this year. Is there concern for you with Clyde Edwards-Helaire going into 2020 specifically, and where he's currently just going in redraft?
Look, you know, here's the thing. Like, I was super excited, and I still am, about Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that offense. And when I was watching him last year in college, I would often remark, he reminds me of LeSean McCoy a lot. Like, a guy who's just going to fight for that extra yardage. He might not be the fastest guy necessarily, but he's a guy that, you know, is going to be a backbreaker on defenses. Like, he's a guy that just, you know, takes that extra defender one more yard or two, and it's just frustrating to play against him. And I thought he would fit really well with Andy Reid. And then sure enough, there it was, it happened. And it went from being a really cool value to, oh my God, people are overdrafting him so much. I have never been into Damian Williams. I was not last year. I got into arguments with many people when people were taking him in between the second and third round, where I thought it was just a waste of a pick. I had zero shares last year. And
you,
I
know what, Joe? Sorry. I feel attacked. You didn't name me by name, but I feel attacked right now on my own podcast. How dare you?
I keep it real, baby. Like, it's just true. Like, I'll get hammered on stuff. Like, I mean, how many years in a row have I gotten hammered on Kenyon Drake, where I was talking him up and it just never happened? Now, I blame Adam Gase, but like, at the end of the day, it's all about whether or not you deliver, and he wasn't delivering. Luckily, he finally got out of there and he started to deliver. So I've luckily never gotten off that bandwagon. But going back to Drake, Damian Williams was there at the same time too. And I saw enough of him there that I never have been a Damian Williams guy. And I know people want to say and start pointing to, well, look what happened at the end of the year. And I think that was more of a byproduct of just how well that offense was running than it was necessarily Damian Williams. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is being overdrafted just a tad right now. I like him a lot more as a fourth round talent or a third round talent than I do as a first or a second. I've seen some crazy stuff, man. And by people in the industry too, where like well-known people in the industry, and they're ruining it. They're ruining Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and this is why we can't have nice things. They take something that we should have, that we should be able to all enjoy at a nice price, and they move him up into a place where now, instead of being a bargain, he has to come back and give you that value. Like, he has to be exactly a top 7-8 running back potentially. And that sucks. Like, I don't want to draft him as that because there's guys that I think are 7-8 running backs easily already. So I'm not going to do that. So if he slips, he's a guy that I certainly want. But Damian Williams, I'm not going to have any shares. And it's the one situation this year with a rookie running back that I still feel is very good and solidified in 2020. It feels like they went up to get that guy and that was their guy. And they've been looking for a guy ever since Kareem Hunt left. And let's not fool ourselves to think that they weren't.
Yeah. And then if you kind of just look a little bit closer at Damian Williams and what he was able to do last season, I mean, there was some good, there was also some not so good from him. His juke rate, which is one of his best stats overall, was actually only 22nd in the National Football League. His total TDs at 7 ranked him number 17th overall in the league, which definitely is a good thing, but that's not something that you can count on, especially with a guy like CEH coming in to split carries with him. The fact that LeSean McCoy was brought in and was tried was kind of pigeonholed into that offense as much as possible, as early as possible from Andy Reid, I think shows that maybe they were thinking of maybe going in a different direction when it comes to Damian Williams. But yeah, I mean, true yards per carry, 41st in the league at just 3.8 yards. It wasn't a good time for Damian Williams last season, even in the little bits of brilliance that we did see from him close to the end of the season. So I do think that eventually it's going to be CEH, but like Joe was saying, I do think this is a situation where one guy's not going to completely go away. And if it's two guys that are really going to be carrying the load in that Kansas City backfield, then I think that's going to diminish the values of both of them. And if you're expecting somebody like CEH to come out gangbusters, I don't necessarily think that you're going to get that return on him, even though he might be a nice upside play. I think a lot of the same can be said about the other very highlighted situations out there. In terms of rookie running backs, when you're looking at the Colts situation, also when you're looking,
disagree very, very vehemently on that one.
Okay, what's your disagreement?
Jonathan Taylor is just head and shoulders better than anybody on that team.
I don't disagree with that. I don't know if I agree with the fact that he's going to be used like he's head and shoulders over everybody on that
team. I mean, I don't know how
the rational coaching type of thing that we kind of go over every year as a fantasy community. We think that the new rookie, he's so much better than the incumbent. And we might even be right, and we see it maybe 2-3 years down the line, but sometimes it takes the coaches a year or two to kind of give that person the full workload that we really expected for him to get out of the game.
Yeah, I don't. I don't agree with that. I mean, like, I'm talking, I think he is head and shoulders better than it. Like, there's no,
I think you're right.
There's Stoppy. No I argument.
I think you're right, absolutely right from a talent perspective. The only thing that gives me pause, well, there's two things that give me pause. Number one is Marlon Mack only has 1 year left on his deal. So there's no incentive not to run him into the ground if they can and move on. The other thing is, how will Taylor play in terms of picking up, you know, pass protections and things like that? And that's where the COVID stuff comes into play. And that's where I'm not concerned at all about the talent of Taylor. I'm slightly concerned of in the first 6 weeks of the season in terms of playing time. How many snaps is he going to play and how's that going to work out? Because what you don't want to do is put Taylor in a spot where he has to perform on your team right away. And the next thing you know, you're 2-4 and you're kind of have an uphill battle to the playoffs. That offensive line is terrific. I love him long-term in Dynasty. I think you're absolutely right there. The talent evaluation is right. And I like Marlon Mack. He's better than people give him credit for. Taylor is a better talent. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, I kind of worry when you have a veteran quarterback who's in the pocket, not necessarily a guy who moves around a little bit. That's my only concern is Taylor ready for all these other responsibilities and with less time to prepare, no OTAs, all that stuff. That's like the real football stuff that kind of creeps in where it's like, oh, it's kind of crapping on what should be a really good fantasy possibility, but it might end up being more of like a Miles Sanders scenario where the last 8 games are better than the first 8 games, if that makes sense.
All right. That's, I mean, and that's fair because, I mean, it's basically what we're looking at. It's the same situation in terms of Kansas City, where you have the incumbent who it has been effective for them. You have the rookie. They don't, you don't really have an incentive to use the rookie all that much in the first eight games. Same thing in Baltimore as well. So it might just be that don't expect those first eight games or don't sell on those first eight games, because that second eight could end up being league winner for you.
I would also say that in the cases of both Baltimore as well as the Colts, both of those teams already have pass catching backs too. So it's not even just one guy that we're necessarily talking about here. Both of these teams already have specialized role pass catching backs. So if we're expecting these rookies to come in and get full workloads immediately, I don't necessarily know if that is going to be the most prudent way of building your rosters. You might want to, again, kind of hedge in a number of ways without really expecting these guys to be your bell cows from day one, even though talent-wise, they probably should be. Now let's move to the Seattle Seahawks. We got some interesting news saying that Antonio Brown is being vetted by the Seattle Seahawks in order to potentially join the team. We were talking about some muddled waters before for Mecole Hardman, his second-year breakout, a guy that can have a second-year breakout after breaking out last season on the Seattle Seahawks. DK Metcalf might be impacted by the signing of Antonio Brown in a system that does not necessarily put the onus on volume when it comes to what Russell Wilson is allowed to do with the football. That's not even to say that Tyler Lockett isn't going to come back and be as effective as he was in the first half of last season before he got injured. So there's a lot of guys that are quickly kind of finding their way to that team and not a lot of volume to go around. Of course, the efficiency is crazy because it's Russell Wilson and he's been one of the most efficient passers in the NFL for some time now. But for me, something's got to give if the Seahawks are still looking for a wide receiver. How would you rate the chances of DK Metcalf having a repeat performance or even a better performance than last season in 2020?
I think there's a really good chance he has a better one. All the targets are there. The red zone targets are there. That's what you're looking for. Now he needs to catch the football. You know, there's some issues there once in a while that kind of crept up on him. Having a guy like Antonio Brown there would be tremendous. But the thing with Antonio Brown is the league's going to have a suspension on him when he comes in. So even if he does sign, you know, you're going to miss four games. Let's just put it that way. And what's going to happen in those four games? Can he stay right for those four games where he's not playing and not be a complete train wreck? So if you're going to take him with like a last round pick or towards the end of a draft, like, you know, a 13th, 14th round pick. Okay, cool. Like that's that. I'm fine with that. There's a lot of guys down there that you're cutting anyway. But DK Metcalf, I have my eye on, and I think you kind of saw him start to emerge. I think he's a tough matchup. I was not somebody who owned a lot of DK Metcalf last year just because he was going in a place where there was a lot of depth at wide receiver last year for my taste, and he was just not one of my quote unquote guys. But I think by the end of the year, I was kind of convinced, and I feel like he's set up this year to have a good season. And I think that it's not that Tyler Lockett's not going to, you know, be useful, but I think DK Metcalf is the better fantasy option because I think there's more touchdown upside potentially.
I guess for me, AB doesn't make any sense for them. They already have a top two very good duo of wide receivers. Chris Carson's no slouch catching the ball. Will Disley, if he's healthy there, but Greg Olsen is a good fill-in, I guess, for the time being. They just don't throw the ball that often either. So I guess I don't know why AB would come or why that would be a good signing personally, but agree on DK. I was very wrong about him last year. I'll bite that bullet. And I mean, he looked great and I don't know why he wouldn't get more targets moving forward. I mean, none of Dorsett doesn't really do anything for me. I think David Moore still exists in Seattle. He doesn't do much for me. I think it's DK and Lockett and then nobody else to catch the ball there. So I think DK's in at least a repeat from last season, but probably a better season.
I've been touting Marquise Brown pretty much all off season. The things that he was able to do last season, despite being injured the vast majority of the season really, really impressed me as it coincided with Lamar Jackson's breakout passing-wise. Now, just kind of digging deeper into what he was able to do, it's even more impressive when you consider that everything he was able to do, he did on a 59% snap share. That was number 102nd in the National Football League's only 71 targets last season. And he's clearly kind of the 1B in that offense, in the same way that that maybe Tyreek Hill is the 1B in the Kansas City Chiefs offense. The real main man in that offense is Mark Andrews. And the fact that they didn't sign really, or they didn't draft really another receiver for me to seriously challenge Marquise Brown makes me think that they have a lot of belief in him, and we're going to see a real heavy workload come season two, just because he's going to be on the field a lot more often than he was in his rookie year. Now, I know Devin Duvernay maybe has a lot of the same attributes that you would give to Marquise Brown in terms of his straight line speed. Miles Boykin, I think, just further insulates him from having increased competition at the wide receiver position for the foreseeable future. Do you guys think that Marquise Brown is going to have himself a year of reckoning in 2020? Or do you think that we saw maybe what he was last year? Maybe he's DeSean Jackson, and that's kind of just what we have to be okay with for the majority of his career.
Yeah, hey, if he ends up being DeSean Jackson, that's okay by me. Like, I'll take not now DeSean Jackson, but
yeah, you know, I was gonna say that's a pretty good career.
Yeah, right there. Like, let me tell you, you know, it's remember when Billy Madison is like Jack Nicholson now or 1972? Like, I want.
You're saying you don't want three game out of 16 or zero out of 16?
My answer is Meg Ryan. No, but my answer is that I feel like he is going to be a boom or bust guy, because that's just Lamar Jackson, and that's what's going to be. But you saw in the early going there that in the right scenarios, there's going to be some big games. And I think where you're drafting him right now as a wide receiver three type guy, there's no reason why, you know, that's exactly what you want out of a wide receiver three, is a boom or bust, like a guy that's going to have some big weeks for you and contribute. And look, maybe in the identity of the Ravens is not going to change. They're going to run the football, and then they're going to run the football, and then they're going to run the football some more, but they're going to have some moments there, and there's going to be some moments for Marquise Brown. What happened last year too is he got hurt. That did not help from a development standpoint, so you need him to stay on the football field. But if he stays on the football field, Eitan, I actually think DeSean Jackson's a really good comp. I think that would be a perfect kind of fit, and much like DeSean Jackson, there's going to be some weeks where it's quiet and some weeks where it's big, and I think what you do is you kind of just take the good with the bad there, and you hope for some more good than bad. But I don't think that there's anybody else there wide receiver wise that really floats my boat, man. It's not the Sneeds or Boykin or anybody else like that. So for me, I think you're looking at Andrews, you're looking at Brown, and I think that's really it, man. I really do. I just don't see them being a very pass heavy offense, or even increasing all that much year over year in terms of throwing the football.
Some key points before I switch this over to Sam as well. Fantasy points per target last year, Marquise Brown, 19th in the league per pass route. He was the eighth wide receiver in terms of fantasy points per pass route. And one of the things that kind of dispels the notion that he's maybe just a straight line speed receiver is the fact that he did not receive so many of his targets that deep down the field. In terms of his average target distance last year, it was actually only 11.9, which ranked 42nd in the league. So he's a bit more versatile than we give him credit for. The thing that I'm really kind of holding my hat on when it comes to Marquise Brown is his yards per pass rate. 2.25, number 25 in the league in a rookie season that, again, was very much impacted by a lingering injury all throughout the season. I'm really, really hyped about this guy moving forward. What about you, Sam?
So, I mean, Joe, I think hit the nail on the head there. It's just that offense isn't going to – there's not going to be enough volume to sustain multiple guys every week. I mean, Mark Andrews is kind of the consistent pass catcher there, and then Marquise Brown will be, like you said, or like Joe said, boom bust. It seems like he was definitely getting more targets before he sat out than after. So I don't know if that had anything to do with anything. But in the first 3 weeks, 4 weeks, he had 5, 13, 9, 7. And even into week 5, he had 5. And then after that, he only had one game of over 5 targets. And that was that was after he sat out 3 games or two, maybe 2 games. But So that might have had something to do with it. We knew coming in that the foot had something, or it was probably going to be a hindrance. But he looked pretty good even with that foot. So I think coming in fully healthy, I would expect better. And not to mention, like, his yards per reception was only 12.7. And I just, with that speed and based off of how I think the Ravens run that offense, where you're going to run a ton and then you're going to take those deep shots, I just have to believe that his efficiency is going to jump too. So not only will you see more targets this year, in terms of, like, he had 71 in 14 games, but I think that you will see better efficiency too. So I expect a better, I guess, from a total production standpoint, I expect better, and from a efficiency standpoint, I expect better, except for maybe the touchdowns. The touchdown rate might come down a little bit, but yeah, I mean, it's somebody that, like, you need to pair a Julian Edelman, a Jamison Crowder with, because those are,
yeah, that's exactly like a Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Like, you need, like, a high volume guy along
with, like, the high ceiling, or relatively high ceiling, or sorry,
high floor, high ceiling. Yeah.
High floor, low ceiling guys.
You know, high ceiling, high floor guy. Like, you know,
like Michael Thomas, you know?
Yeah. Just the perfect player.
You know, but
just,
yeah, I mean, well, but,
you know, but there are those guys. No, but, like, you're right. Like, I think you can take a guy like that when you have a Julio, or you have a Michael Thomas already in the roster. If you are building a bunch of number two wide receivers, then I don't like having him as part of that nearly as much as the complement to, let's say, Godwin and Kupp or something like that.
Well,
I mean,
I think Michael Thomas, Marquise Brown would be perfect too, because Michael Thomas is going to get volume. Marquise Brown won't, but he will give you week winning games.
One volume thing I will say in Marquise Brown's favor is the simple fact that, yeah, his touchdown rate at 15.2% was pretty high last year, 13th in the league overall, but he actually got 9 red zone receptions. Like, they're consistently passing to him in the red zone in those situations. It's not like they're looking for him to then take it to the house on all these occasions. So
I would argue, though, that because of his stature and because of guys like Miles Boykin and Devin Duvernay, that, and obviously Mark Andrews, and the fact that they run the ball so much, I just can't imagine that they're going to use Marquise Brown that much in the red zone, unless it's like short dump down or screen passes where he can run it in. Because he's not, I mean, he's just not a jump and catch the ball type guy.
No, he's not a high point the ball kind of guy. He's not that. He's not a jump ball guy. Like, he's there to be DeSean Jack. He's there to blow bad guys, run those fly routes, beat you know, slower corners. And Lamar's got a great arm. Like, Lamar's going to be able to find him. As Lamar matures with a quarterback, so too Marquise Brown's fantasy stats will rise. But I think in year two for Jackson as the starter full time, and year two for Brown, I think what you're looking for is a slight uptick from last year, not an enormous one, but I think a decent size enough where, as a wide receiver three with the proper roster construction, he's a really nice piece. But I would caution everybody, don't go that other way where you're like, oh, I'm just gonna take a bunch of these upside guys and I'm gonna take DK Metcalf and him and all this. Like, no, like, that's not what you want to do. You've got to have a high volume guy in there. If it's a Thielen, if it's a Kupp, if it's somebody else like that, that you know is going to get X number of targets, X number of catches every single week. That way Brown is just bonus. And when he is not bonus, when he's not good, it might not sink you completely. So it's really about roster construction when it comes to him.
Absolutely. Roster construction is something we are always, always touting on this show. And it is even more so important when we're looking to try and pair somebody that's going to give you some upside with somebody that is going to give you some safety when you are looking to get the best out of your roster. Now let's move to our final forgotten man of the episode. This guy is not a sophomore. This guy's a junior. He's on one of the most popular teams in the NFL. He catches passes from Dak Prescott, and people seem to have forgotten his name. Michael Gallup last year got over 1,000 receiving yards. He was 14th in terms of completed air yards. He was 22nd in yards after the catch. And people think that CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper are going to completely run that team when it comes to getting all of the target volume. not to mention Blake Jarwin as well, but that's neither here nor there. Are we not thinking enough about Michael Gallup, or does the impact of bringing in a third receiver really make it hard to see more of an upside for this wide receiver out of Colorado State?
Well, Gallup had a great year last year. There's no doubt about that. And, CeeDee Lamb is an amazing talent. I'm a big fan. And, you know, I think he can eat in this offense too, because Randall Cobb had over 800 yards receiving. So there's no reason to think that he can't come in and come close to that potentially. If there's an injury to Amari Cooper, you know, I think that's a bump up for both Gallup and Lamb. I agree. Gallup kind of gets lost in the shuffle there with so many other weapons. And I think he's a good value there. I've been a very big Dak Prescott fan for a while. I was very glowing about him in the Black Book last year. I wrote him up as a mid to high level QB1. And people were like, what are you, crazy? And then he threw for almost 5,000 yards. So I was like, yeah, I'm crazy, but I'm right about Dak Prescott. And I just feel like this is another guy that people didn't realize, you know, this guy was pretty good. The only time where he had bad games really were when Ezekiel Elliott had missed that stretch of games where he was suspended. And outside of that, he's been pretty darn good. I mean, he's gotten better every single year. He's got an embarrassment of riches in terms of the weapons around him. And Gallup is one of them. And I think Gallup is one of these guys that will float under the radar. And I think at the end of the day, he's going to have around 1,000 yards, and he's going to have enough touchdowns where he's going to return his ADP. And I think that's what's great, because, you know, everybody's talking about the Amari Coopers of the world. Everyone's talking about, you know, Ezekiel Elliott. And now everyone's going to talk about CeeDee Lamb, and he kind of gets lost in the shuffle there. And that's a good thing for fantasy purposes, because it means that he is underappreciated and potentially might come at a better value. So I actually like Gallup this year. I mean, if you ask me long terms, I think CeeDee Lamb is going to overtake him in the offense. But in year one, especially this year, I think it's still a very good investment.
I believe there was a tweet, and I'm trying to verify this, but that showed in the second half of the season, Gallup was the top, was on pace to be the top fantasy wide receiver, or maybe just have the top line among the Dallas wide receivers. Cobb was number two, and Amari Cooper was number three. I switched around that way, but basically the point was Gallup was on top in terms of points per game. In fact, 15.29 points per game to Amari Cooper's 12.93 and Cobb's 11.88. So really, if you think about it, Dak, I believe, held three top 36 wide receivers. I would have to verify that one again too, but I mean, he threw the ball 595 times last year. It was the highest number. He's getting Mike McCarthy, who, I mean, is known to be a high volume coach. Mind you, he had Aaron, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and Aaron Rodgers. Not to say that Dak is Aaron Rodgers, by the way, had Dak as a top five QB last year too. So there you go, Joe. I'm with you, buddy.
Look at us. See, now we're back together. Look, see, we were arguing before about Damian Williams, and now we made up over Dak Prescott.
So in bringing in CeeDee Lamb, getting another great pass catcher in Tony Pollard, which we found last year, Blake Jarwin's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, you have a lot of pass catching options there. So while a lot of people will say, oh, there's too many mouths to feed or some cliche like that, I look at it as, this means that they're likely going to be throwing a lot. And I think that secondary isn't nearly as good. I believe because Byron Jones signed with Miami. So they may be behind more often, or at least having to play catch up sometimes. So I think Dak's in for 600 plus passing attempts again. And, I mean, even if Gallup only gets 100, and let's just say he gets 90 to 110 targets somewhere in there, with how he played last year, that still equates to wide receiver two season. So in terms of value, I think Michael Gallup's the best value wide receiver on the Cowboys. He's probably the wide receiver I will own most of on the Cowboys because of that value.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of the Rams a couple of years ago. This is just an offense that you want a part of, kind of any way that you can get it. Now, Tony Pollard, for me, might be a little bit of a pipe dream just because I expect Zeke Elliott to get the vast majority of the volume in that offense because he's Zeke Elliott and because they paid him ridiculous amounts of money to be the running back for that team, even though Tony Pollard justifiably probably deserves more work. But, yeah, this is just an offense that you want a part of any which way you can get it. I think any way you do it, you're gonna get some kind of value for that acquisition, even if it's an expensive piece like Dak Prescott or Amari Cooper. At this point, I still think you're going to get return on that investment because of what we expect that Cowboys offense to be under Mike McCarthy in 2020. But that is going to be the end of our 5-point inspection today. Thank you so much for joining us along that ride. Let's now plug in the analyzer and get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. Let's look at the roster that Sam sent me. Let's see if it's here.
It is.
All right. So it is from Bronco Keeper. And it is a – what is it? What kind of roster is it?
I don't know. He didn't give us all the information.
He didn't give me the rules. He didn't give us the rules, man. Don't
blame me. Blame that. Blame – what is it? His name's Holmes. Let's go, Holmes.
Thank you, Holmes. Thank you, Holmes. Anyway.
He wanted it to be a mystery, guys. Yeah. Get it?
By the way, if I'm looking
thank
at
you,
this,
Sherlock.
If I'm looking at this, this definitely looks like a 12-team to me. But
it looks like a 12-team, one quarterback league.
Everybody, send me all the information so we can help you. We're going to assume 12-team, normal PPR.
Looks like a one quarterback league based on what he has, but I don't know. Yeah. All right, so at running back, let's start there and then move it to wide receiver. I don't see the tight ends here. Sam, can you fix that? And then I got the QBs after that. So at running back, Darius Geis, Nick Chubb, Mark Walton, Reggie Bonifon, Brian Hill, Kareem Hunt, Lamar Miller, and Ish Smith. Miller and Smith, I don't believe are going to have any relevance this season. Kareem Hunt, I think, is going to be very, very effective in that Cleveland offense, regardless of how they choose to use him as a running back or as a receiver. He is effective in both roles. Reggie Bonifon, I mean, if he wasn't going to get carries behind CMC last year, it wasn't going to happen, so I don't think it's going to happen. Mark Walton, I really don't know what happens there as well. There is some uncertainty in terms of what happens with Joe Mixon going into the beginning of the season, whether or not he's a holdout risk in just the same vein as Dalvin there? Cook. No, he's actually in Miami.
I was going to say.
He was there last year. And then Darius Geis. Darius Geis is his own kind of issues. He has just about 15 guys he's battling with in his backfield, four carries on an offense that we don't expect to be that good. I will say, though, that one thing kind of in the positives for a guy like Darius Geis is the fact that with the addition of Chase Young to an already very strong defensive line in Washington, we would expect this defense to be pretty good. If this is a team that wants to kind of run the ball and protect Haskins a little bit, they might be able to have that opportunity just based on what that defense is able to do. So whoever it is that does gain most of the work as the running back in that offense, I think is going to be very productive. I just don't know if it's going to be mostly Darius Geis, because there are so many mouths to feed there. But let's look at the running back position as a whole with the names I just mentioned. Joe, what do you think about this running back squad as a whole? Would you make any changes?
Give me the names again, because there was a lot of things firing around there. So the running backs again. Yeah.
Darius Geis, Nick Chubb, Mark Walton, Reggie Bonifon, Brian Hill, Kareem Hunt, Lamar Miller, and Ish Smith.
Yeah, you definitely need some depth there because you have you have Hunt and Chubb, which is great, but you're going to live and die with the Browns all year. The rest of this, you need to go back heavily. So I don't know when the rookie draft is, but I would be making it a priority to move up and get yourself a Taylor or a Swift or a Hilaire or somebody like that, because I think you kind of desperately need it with the rest of that group, because I don't think a lot of those guys are going to be able to really contribute this year. Now, the good news is you have two guys. who I think very, very highly of, but I think you need a third one in there because, I mean, I just, from the names you were writing off, if I got them all correctly, it just seems basically like it's Chubb and Hunt. Am I missing something here, guys?
No. It's
Chubb, Hunt, and one-legged guys as of right now.
Well, here's the thing with guys. I would hang on to guys one more year because it doesn't because letting him go at this point is futile.
Yep.
Because someone else is going to pick him up and speculate, and that'll be your luck. Like, he'll actually have a decent season. Now, guys was a tease last year, man, because he came out there and he looked really good in those two games he played, and then he got hurt again.
That one in Carolina, specifically, where everybody was like, he's been, and then he got hurt.
It's all happening. Oh, I was so excited, and then it all went to crap, and it was a bummer because he was so cheap in DFS, and I had him that week, actually, that he had that good week in Carolina. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be a thing for, like, a couple weeks before the price goes up, and it never happened. It went away, unfortunately, but I hang on to guys because you can't get anything for him.
Yep.
But I would definitely be looking to move up in your rookie draft. Now, the good news is there's, you know, we just listed four or five backs. You can put Cam Akers in that grouping too. There's enough guys there to get excited about. And if you miss out on those guys or you can't move up, I would actually speculate on a guy like a Keyshawn Vaughn, because somebody's going to have to catch passes out of the backfield for Tom Brady, because that's what Tom Brady does. I'm a Pat fan. I'm just telling you right now. He is going to teach somebody how to be James White, Deion Lewis, Kevin Falk. Like, somebody's going to be that in this offense because that's what Tom Brady likes to do. And it's not going to be Ronald Jones. I'm just telling you right now. I don't think it's going to be that guy catching that. So if this is PPR, it's not going to be Dare. We played this game last year.
How dare you? Nigerian Nightmare 2.0.
Hey, he's like
a Nigerian. I don't think he's quite a nightmare. He's more like just like a nap that got cut short.
Hey, Eitan, let's make sure that we're putting a little bit of a gap, because I think there's a little bit of a delay here. But yeah, I mean, so by the way, he has 1.03 and 1.04, Joe. So he definitely can get two of those
picks
top.
Wise. Oh,
yes.
So he's in a good spot. Well, there you go. So you're gonna, if he's got both of those picks, forget it. Like, you basically just locked in. Like, probably Taylor and Swift, or Taylor and Akers, or Swift and Akers, something like that's perfect. That's exactly what you need to do.
Yep.
And jettison those guys that are just never going to see the light of day, because like the Bonifons, like, what are you going to do? If this is like a 16 team league, okay. But outside of that, man, I can't justify that.
Now, assuming this guy doesn't have the picks that he does have, assuming he doesn't have the 103, the 104, he has to do this without picks. Let's talk about guys that you would speculate on bringing in potentially in the running back room that could help you this year. There are some undervalued guys out there, maybe not undervalued, but at least guys that people are a little bit wary of. One of those is Kerryon Johnson. Do you think he would be a valid addition to this team?
You know, I just think he's more trouble than he's worth. I'll tell you what, if you had Swift, then okay, like, you just maybe want to own the whole backfield in Dynasty. Okay, I can get behind that notion, but you picked a bad guy for me, because Kerryon was my number one bust last year coming into the season.
God damn it, Joe. You're just like, I'm just gonna be the guy that's gonna poop on everybody's parade and be right about it.
You know what? Here's the difference with me and everybody else. I put it in a goddamn book.
Yeah, so, like, this guy literally wrote a book, so need to buy that.
Like, where I said last year that Derrick Henry's going to lead the league in rushing, and then on the last week of the season, my phone starts blowing up. This is a true story. This is so funny. So, like, it's like the third, you know, third Christmas, because I'm Italian, you know, like third or fourth Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a million people over your house as the year goes on, right, for Christmas. And I've got, like, 10 people at my house, and I see my phone just like, rawr, rawr. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And I look, and all these people are sending me the whole, officially NFL, you know, Derrick Henry's literally. I was like, yeah, look at that. I didn't even know. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, well, that's a nice thing. Now, it was only by like a couple yards, but right is right, so who cares?
I mean, I would be taking.
Well, this is why you get the black book. You get the black book to me, that wasn't even that hard of a thing. And it's funny, he is the number one guy on the board to bet this year in Vegas to lead the league again. And you know what? I'm going to double down on it because those guys don't exist anymore. The guys who carry the ball 20 to 25 times a game and are the focal point to their offense, they don't exist. Then
yeah.
And they tend to exist for like 2 to 3 year windows. So get in on the window, because it's still open and nobody wants to tackle Derrick Henry. I don't, you don't, Eitan does it. Nobody wants to. The Ravens didn't want to, the Patriots didn't want to, nobody wants to tackle this guy.
So I would bet I would bet on Nick Chubb, by the way. I'm betting on Nick Chubb.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing.
With Kareem Hunt,
I'm going to kill you, Eitan. Shut up.
I know how you feel, Sam.
No. I know how you feel. Dude, I'm with Eitan on this one. Kareem Hunt. People are forgetting how good Kareem Hunt is. Nope.
I'm dying on this. I'm dying on this island, this ship, this hill. I'm going to die at some point, and I'm going to die with Nick Chubb on my mind.
Well, what is it about Kerryon Johnson that you find exciting? Because he was inconsistent.
Oh, no. I'm not. Don't.
I wasn't saying that Kerryon was exciting. I was just saying he's one of those guys that you're not really thinking of acquiring right now because of the presence of DeAndre Swift. I would also say, you know, maybe Mark Ingram, although I would think that people that have Mark Ingram are probably holding on for another year. But who's a cheap RB that
you know what, though? They might not. Yeah. You know what, Eitan? They might not be, man. They might be looking to move Ingram now while he's at the high point. And that's a kind of team where I would take it. I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, give me Mark Ingram one more time, especially in the COVID world, especially as, you know, it's Lamar still learning. Because Ingram was so important on the field and on the bench to him. Like, you know, he was basically like his right-hand man there. You could see them talking all the time and things like that. He was like a coach on the field. I don't think Ingram's going anywhere. Sorry, like guys, like I know every year everyone wants to get rid of him, but this is another guy too that you could probably add on the cheap right now that I think would be a decent one. And you could take a flyer on Kerryon. That's fine too. Sometimes guys respond when there's another guy in the backfield. I just think Swift is better.
Oh, I agree with that. Kerryon was just that number one buy for everybody because it was like, oh, he's so good, but he was just injured last year. And it was like, yeah, but he's been injured for his entire life, basically, since high school. So it's and they did bring in DeAndre Swift, who I agree, I think is better. So I guess Kerryon, maybe Philip Lindsay is a better option there. I think Philip Lindsay can be efficient with the ball and will get, I think, 40% of the touches in that backfield. So they'll take some of his touches away, but I think he'll return an efficiency. So that's another guy you could look at. I agree on
Mark. You know what? I love that, Stompy. I agree about Lindsay too, because I love Philip Lindsay. And I just feel like, you know, Mark Ingram is going to screw him at least early on. But the one thing we all know about, Melvin Gordon's going to screw him early on. But the one thing we know about Melvin Gordon is that he gets hurt a lot. Like, he's just not always on the field. And the worst times where you need Melvin Ingram, he's not available to you. So Lindsay might be another guy that, you know, you look at the last couple of years, over the last, two or three years, is I think he's like the fifth or sixth overall rusher or something crazy like that.
Well, I think he lands in kind of an Austin Eckler situation. I'm not saying he's going to be Austin Eckler, but give him some targets, give him those change of pace, speed. I mean, he's faster than Gordon, but give him those and you have the makings of a top 20 or top 36, maybe top 24 running back because of efficiency. I do agree on Ingram. What I would actually be doing, I'm going to break the rules of Eitan's little game here because I do know he has these picks. What I would do is buy Mark Ingram and then pick up J.K. Dobbins, because I think you get you lock up a very voluminous backfield. And I think it's going to be one of those situations where Ingram kind of seeds carries as the season wears on, and Dobbins could be the guy at the, like you compared Miles Sanders last year, he could be the Miles Sanders for Baltimore this year. But to start out, Ingram, I think, and he was ultra efficient last year, by the way, 230 touches, and he was still RB11, I believe. So I think Ingram is in for the first half of the season of being very, very fantasy relevant, very much of value. But then if you get Dobbins in the draft if Ingram gets hurt or Dobbins starts to take over, then you're looking pretty sweet into the back half of the season too.
All right, y'all, let's move on to wide receiver for this team. At wide receiver on this team, we got Antonio Brown, who we just spoke about. Whether or not that materializes, I don't know, but there is some speculation that he could go to either Seattle or to Baltimore. DJ Moore, I assume, is the Moore here. That is, for me, a top five dynasty receiver at this point. I think he's going to be very, very close to a top 10 receiver at the end of this year. I just think that's not even the ceiling for him. I think it just continues to get better. I just don't know if Teddy Bridgewater is the one to really bring him to his zenith. Michael Thomas, for the first time in a long time, there's a clear wide receiver two in a Saints land, but I mean,
is there really?
I mean, I would say Emmanuel Sanders is one. I would say Emmanuel Sanders is a clear wide receiver too, if Emmanuel Sanders is healthy. I just don't know what happened last season in terms of him coming back kind of gangbusters and then taking a little bit of time to kind of get into it. Maybe he was just trying to get off of the injury table. But, I mean, he's better than Ted Ginn. He's better than everybody else the Saints have thrown out at wide receiver two for the last 5 years or however long you can remember. I mean, he's better than Traquan Smith. So if we're looking and comparing it to these guys, then, yeah, I would say that that is definitely a clear upgrade there. I would just say that for the first time in a long time, there's at least a chance of other people catching footballs for Drew Brees. I don't think that we've seen that outside of Alvin Kamara for a while. Terrence Williams, I don't think that's very relevant here. And then Mike Evans, a lot of people are kind of going separate ways with Mike Evans. Some people think that Tom Brady means the death of Mike Evans. Joe, you described yourself as a Patriots fan, so I'm going to give you this. What does Tom Brady mean for Mike Evans, and are you worried this year?
Well, Mike Evans is in a unique situation. He might become the first guy to have 7 1,000-yard seasons in a row in the last like 20-something years or something like that, I think I saw. And I don't think it's the death of Mike Evans. I just think that Godwin is the guy that fits Brady better profile-wise at this stage in his career. That being said, Mike Evans is still going to be somewhere around 1,000 yards and somewhere around 8 touchdowns. But even last year, you know, Mike Evans is one of these guys that has monstrous games, and then you know, at times can go a little dormant. I prefer the guy like Godwin, who's going to be a little bit higher floor every week with a high ceiling, as opposed to the guy that just has the high ceiling, which I think is more of what Evans is. And my whole problem of why I'm just I'm not trying to throw cold water on, you know, Brady going over there. But Tom Brady last couple of years has run a lot of play action. A lot of the passing is off that. And they had a lot of running the football and effective short passing game in order to set up that play action kind of stuff to get defenses to come in a little bit. Tampa has struggled mightily in the last few years trying to find a running game or anything close to it. And that is going to be interesting to watch. So that's the one caveat there. I don't think it's the death of Mike Evans, but I think I do prefer Godwin clearly if I have the choice between the two of them on the board. But that's just personal. Like, I like to structure my team that way. But I don't think it's the death of Mike Evans. I think that's blowing things out of proportion too.
I think in terms of value, the value now seems to have caught up with him, where I don't mind taking him where he's going. I mean, okay, I'll say this. I'm not taking a wide receiver generally in the first two or probably three rounds of a startup, so I don't have a chance at Evans.
Tommy just doesn't believe in wide receivers, in case you guys don't understand.
No, I do. I believe in Robert Woods and Adam Thielen going in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. But I mean, I agree on Evans. Like, it's not like he's just gonna die. He may not. I think he'll get 1,000 yards, but he may only get 908. But you still are talking about a good fantasy wide receiver. Not to mention that Jameis Winston has been his starting quarterback for over the last two seasons, and we know Jameis Winston creates his own garbage time, where he makes mistakes, and combined with a bad defense, they had to play catch up a lot and throw a lot more. With Brady, you're definitely not expecting mistakes from him. So I would say the passing volume may end up actually going down for Tampa because of the Brady signing, not to mention the ADOT probably goes down, which is another in favor of Godwin. So that's where you have to be a little bit concerned about Mike Evans, because Tom Brady's just, his deep ball's not the same. So I don't mind. I mean, on this team, he's what, wide receiver three, which is fantastic, because you're still talking about potential wide receiver one, but probably a wide receiver two. And then you have Michael Thomas and DJ Moore to just wipe the floor with. So, I mean, on this team, there's no issue whatsoever. But yes, I agree. Mike Evans might be in for a relatively down year, but I'm not overly worried about the situation.
I feel like that's a far cry from some of the conversations we've had about Mike Evans. I can't even say words anymore. Previously on this show, because
you're gonna put words in my mouth, aren't you?
To date, you've been saying that Mike Evans will not get 1,000 yards. In fact, if you listen to a few episodes back on our show, you've said that several times, and I had to completely disagree with that. I don't
prove
think,
it. Nope. I prove it. Think, I'm making you prove it. Prove it.
It's on the show. It's recorded. It's on the internet.
Now prove it. I'm making you do work, Eitan. Prove it.
Going into the 2020 season, I do think Mike Evans is still within a shot of being a top 10 wide receiver. I think the issue with Mike Evans right now is I don't think people are starting to discount him because of him. In a vacuum, I think people are starting to discount him a little bit in comparison to Godwin. Kind of as Joe was describing, I think Godwin is probably the better fit with Tom Brady. But whether or not Tom Brady can make Mike Evans work, assuming that Mike Evans has his head in it, Mike Evans was a 1,000-yard receiver for the first 5 years of his career with a very inefficient quarterback. Yes, Jameis Winston makes his own garbage time, but Tom Brady is going to be a lot more accurate with the football, and that's what you would want from Mike Evans. So I do think that this is going to be a situation where we just see pretty much everyone that's a receiver in this offense have a decent year because of what we expect that offense to be this season. They're in a wide open division, and I expect them to be one of those teams that is going to be within a shout of being in those shootouts pretty much game to game. So that benefits everybody. Let's now look at some of the tight ends here. Sam, I don't think I have the tight ends.
No, it's on there. So the guy, when he sent us the pick, it cut off the tight ends. I'm going to make a very wild guess here. This is super professional podcasting. I think it's Ryan Griffin and Chris Herndon.
Okay. Yeah. Because
the way he types it out, he does first letter of the first name and then the full last name, and it's a C and an R. And the way he did the quarterbacks with Luck and Brissett makes me think it is the New York Jets tight end.
So the way that we're going to approach this is obviously something needs to change at the tight end position. We're not even going to debate whether or not that's the case. Now, who is the tight end that you can somewhat cheaply acquire that you think is going to get you that top 5 to 6 tight end production this year? Why is it Blake Jarwin? Why is it Tyler Higbee?
It's not Blake Jarwin.
And where do we go from here?
I'll tell you who it is, Eitan. I'm going to name one name. Actually, you can probably guess who I'm going to name.
I don't even want you. Don't
say
do it. No.
Say it.
I will not.
His name's Jack Doyle. His name's Jack Doyle, and you put some respect on that name.
Go away with your Jack Doyle nonsense all the time. Joe, can you please bring some semblance of some type of realism to this conversation?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Now, again, he's had some good tight ends to throw to in the past, but Phillip Rivers has had a tight end one every single year of his career except one. And the one time it was just outside of it, and it was one of the Green boys. I forget it was Ladarius Green or Virgil Green. I forget. I get my greens crossed sometimes. So in terms of that, I think it was Ladarius. But I mean, I think that when you look at it, you go, all right, there's certainly with no Ebron there, the one tight end, there's a lot to like there. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Mike Tagliere and I actually just talked about that on my show. I had him on and we talked about him, and he was basically, you know, kind of saying that. And he, you know, there's a lot of, you know, guys who are really smart, like Tags, who are on that train right now. A lot of people on the Hayden Hurst train
and Stompy
and the Stompy train. It's Stompy train. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at guys. I mean,
right?
I don't think Hayden Hurst is a guy you're going to acquire cheaply right now, because I think everybody's talking about him. I think that for 1 year, I think I could roll one more time with Jared Cook, because I think he's going to catch touchdowns. And that's all you have to do to be a tight end one every week. Austin Hooper's value is at an all-time low, which is kind of funny because he's coming off one of his better seasons despite the injury. But like, everyone's given up on him, but I don't think they should, because Stefanski is not the same football coach as Freddie Kitchens. And I don't think you're going to see so little opportunity for the tight end position. And Noah Fant is the guy to me that I like at the end of drafts. Ooh. In terms of like the end of the tight end one. I mean, Noah Fant to me, I thought was going to be the better of the two tight ends that came in last year from Iowa. And I thought that he showed you some moments last year. And I think Denver's another team that's got a lot of weapons on it. Like, that's kind of like Daniel Jones situation. Drew Locke's like almost too big to fail. So if you can kind of get on the sly right now, Noah Fant, before he kind of blows up, I would do that. Hurst would be an option. I think Doyle is definitely an option in full point PPR. I think you can at least get by with that. I don't know what kind of touchdown upside he's got, but all I can say is, you know, you go look at the track record of Phillip Rivers. It's very good. He throws for 4,000 yards every year. He's going from the worst offensive line in football to the best. I'm not expecting him to win an MVP, but he's also going into a system that he knows. I mean, Frank Reich was his coach in San Diego as an OC, and the OC now and the Colts was his quarterback coach there. So it's like he's not walking into verbiage in a playbook that he's unfamiliar with. They know exactly what to do with Rivers. They know exactly what they're talking about. They know exactly what kind of things they want to run. And he just went from the worst situation all line-wise to the best all line potentially. And I think there's a lot to like there with Doyle. So I think Stompy's on the right track there with that one.
Yes. By the way, you want to know where Jason Witten finished last year? Eitan?
Too high.
He was a tight end 11.
Too high. Way too high.
Jack Doyle. Jack Doyle's going to put up those type of numbers.
Look, I don't hate Jack Doyle. I just
no, you do. You do.
I'm just if I'm looking for any semblance of upside at tight end, and that's kind of what I'm doing because, I mean, honestly, after five, you're really kind of SOL anyway. So when I look at tight end, I'm looking at somebody that is at least going to give me a boom week every now and then and assume that he's going to let me down most of the season. So I'm not necessarily looking for a guy like Jack Doyle that might catch five passes for 40 yards. I'm looking for the guy that's going to catch the touchdowns or the guy that's going to catch that one big play or those two big plays. So yeah, Noah Font being brought up, I think is exactly kind of where I would go because I'd be looking for a guy that has at least the ability to even on just one catch kind of make the entire day worth it at that particular moment. And Jack Doyle doesn't do it for me in that particular instance. That's why. But I can see where you're coming from if you're looking for like a safety option at tight end and maybe you're looking to be a little bit more wild somewhere else on your roster. By the way, let me
just say something, though. Let me defend myself. So we're going to name Noah Fant Noah Times New Roman for Eitan. So there's a font joke for you. And
stop it. You can turn off this podcast now.
No, I'm doing it. I'm doing this. There's gonna be a font joke in the title of this podcast. Right. Another one, Jared Cook. I mean, going right behind Jack Doyle, I believe, according to DLF ADP.
I believe in Jared Cook. Who Jared might be the wide receiver too?
Yeah, I mean, I would say pass catcher three on that offense, but I mean, he put up another wide or tight end one season again last year, and he only played 14 games, caught a ton of touchdowns, so he'll need more targets. But I mean, when you're getting these guys this late, so by the way, Jared Cook is actually tight end 24, Jack Doyle is tight end 26. So, I mean, I guess that's where for me with drafts and values, I punt tight end and non-tight end premium leagues because, like you said, every year, like beyond really just beyond the top three is just a shit show at tight end. Like, you're going to get boom and bust weeks from these guys. And, like, I just want, like, consistent production. And I think Jack Doyle can get you consistent production.
There's a soft middle of tight end this year that wasn't clear last year. Jared Cook was a guy that I liked last year. Yeah. And I tried to, you know, put out there as one of those options. I give Mike Randall all the credit for putting me on to Mark Andrews. Mike is a very bright football guy. He's one of the contributors to Black Book. And we were in the flex league together and he took Andrews and he was telling me about him. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this guy. I'm like, this is going to be your guy. Cause I'm telling you right now, I'm going to give you all the credit. And he was definitely on him. Whereas, you know, Waller, Andrews, those guys kind of showed up. I think this year you look in, those guys exist this year already, and I think they've proven themselves a bit. I think Evan Engram, you know, potentially bouncing back too if he's healthy, is intriguing with Daniel Jones as quarterback. Cook is an option. I think Fant is an option. Doyle's an option. Hurst might be an option. No, that's where I draw the line. I'm not going to do the Gesicki. Yeah, well, because I just don't think it's going to be enough. Now, I do think Tua is going to play more than 8 games this year. So you can put me in there. You want your hot take? Ready to go? There you go, Stompy. Write this down for next year. Tua is going to play 8 games at minimum this year.
Wow. Because I have him not playing at all because I think it's a risk that's not even close to worth it. But I actually like that.
Here's the thing.
I like it in terms of the hot take. I don't know if I love it just in terms of actual.
And I'll take it a step farther. Ooh. Ready? Here we go. I'm going to put it in a better perspective for you. In super flex leagues, if you have quarterbacks, like the top kind of quarterbacks, like Mahomes and Prescott, who all have late round buys, like late week buys, rather like week 9 and 10 and things like that. You go look at the end of Tua's schedule. Tua plays the Jets back-to-back weeks towards the end of the year. He's got some really soft games potentially. The one thing I know about Tua is he is going, nobody outcompetes that guy. He's a lunatic. He's going to find a way to compete himself into that job sooner than later. People are like, oh, he's going to play 2 games or 4 games or whatever. I'm telling you right now, he's going to play somewhere around 8. That's my number for him.
All right. And one thing I will say about that Miami Dolphins team, which leads me to believe what Joe is saying when it comes to throwing the guy out there, even though there might be some risk associated with that, is Miami kind of had every right to go ahead and full-on tank again this year, right? To go ahead, let Tua sit out the entire year, not really try to build up the defense too much, just try to acquire cheap pieces and then keep it moving for next season and kind of rebuild at that point when you have a healthy quarterback. But they didn't do that. What they did is they went out and they got Byron Jones. They went out and they got another top-end cornerback. They drafted a cornerback in this class. They are trying to compete today, right now. And so I think that means that Fitzgerald's job might not necessarily be as locked in stone for the year as we would have previously thought, because it looks like this coaching staff is looking to get wins this season and isn't looking to kick the can down the road at all, just based on what they've done this offseason. Simple things like even giving Devontae Parker that extension. They're trying to build a foundation for the future this year and to actually have a winning culture.
I think saying they're looking to compete this year is you're mislabeling it. They're looking to be competitive, but like just in terms of actually competing for the AL or the AL.
I don't think they're
on my mind. Joe, we got baseball coming back.
I think you're right. They are going to be more competitive. Let's not forget how many they went out there and won a game they shouldn't have at the end of the year in New England, and they did. Yeah. And this is a team that fought out there at the end of the season quite a bit. And I'm telling you, that's the Brian Flores mentality. Okay. I told you, I'm a Pats fan. I'm telling you, he doesn't care what anybody thinks. He's there to win football games, and he is going to try everything he can to win football games.
Okay.
And so is Tua. And I'm just telling you guys, remember, you heard it here first. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I will always cop to it. I always do. But I watch Tua practice. I'm watching him work out and those three things. I just think October is still a long way away, and he's going to find a way to do it. And everyone's going to go, oh my God. And then by the time November rolls around, he's going to be the quarterback before Thanksgiving.
By the way, I have been some of these eliminators that have been going on. I've been grabbing both Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua. So I have been hedging my bets there. I'm on the I don't think to a play side, but I'm just like, you never know. I mean, maybe they are competing because it is the AFC East, and it's probably
wide
open at this point.
It really is. It's wide open.
One more tight end I wanted to just bring up before we actually analyze this roster. We're talking about tight ends too much in one tight end non-premium league, but what about Gerald Everett? The Rams look like they may be playing a lot of 12 personnel this year. They showed it at the second half of the season last year, which means Gerald Everett has a chance to actually play a lot of snaps and actually get some targets. I love Higbee. I had him in multiple leagues at the end of the season last year that helped me into playoffs and championships. But I mean, is Everett a guy that you're taking a chance on? He's going, tight end.
No, not for me. Like, if I'm taking chances on tight end, it's the Ian Thomases and Jonnu Smiths of the world and goes with guys like that. There's already another tight end there. And if I want to do that, I might as well just take Dallas Goedert then.
Fair enough.
Because I think he's going to.
Well, you know what I mean? Hold on. We'll see. I'm the foremost expert on Dallas Goedert at this point.
Why? Were you the guy that punched him in the face?
No, I was the guy that broke the video. So I'm the foremost expert on South Dakota State and Dallas Goedert. But I'm done. So that I just wanted to drop that in there that I made breaking news.
I was just gonna let you dig your own hole there. I was just gonna see how far that went.
To me, anyway, he has a concussion because I'm a doctor, so you just got to watch out for that.
Well, did you see my line on Twitter about it? I said the counts as a target and a reception.
Does it count as a? But are you sure, or is it a target and a drop?
Maybe all three. Jeez. Good time.
We do have no morals on this podcast.
We're having fun talking football.
That is going to be. Did we even go over quarterback? I think you had Daniel Jones and like Andrew Luck, and we already talked about Daniel Jones.
Well, it's time to drop.
It's a one quarterback league. We're assuming. Yeah, it's a one quarterback league. We're assuming that you're fine at quarterback, so we'll move on with that. But that is going to be the end of our analysis. Again, words are just super difficult for me, so bear with me, guys. But that's the end of our analysis this week. Now we're going to go into the most fun part of the podcast. Joe, I know you've done this before. You did this last year when you were on the show. This is the Dynasty Diagnostic. You are currently in the service center. In the service center, we work on automobiles. These automobiles are our teams, but we have to refer to them in a manner that is befitting of the Dynasty Diagnostic itself. So what is this roster to you in terms of a make, model of a car? Let me go ahead and give you the roster one more time and give you some time to think here. So, at quarterback, we have Daniel Jones, Andrew Luck, Jacoby Brissett. At running back, Darius Geis, Nick Chubb, Mark Walton, Reggie Bonifon, Brian Hill, Kareem Hunt, Lamar Miller, and Ish Smith. At wide receiver, Antonio Brown, Moore, Thomas, Williams, and Evans. And at tight end, we just think that there really isn't much there. So, how would you rate this team?
I feel like this is it's decent. I think it's gonna get you from A to B. I feel like it's competitive. I don't know. It's like a Honda CRV or something. It's all right. Like it's a decent. You know, if you have to pick up the kids, you could do that. If you have to, you know, go grocery shopping, you could do that in it. If you have to go out on a date, you could. You can get it all. You know, cleaned up or whatever. I feel like that's kind of where it is. I'm calling it a car. I think that's about it. I think it's missing that sexy piece necessarily, but maybe Kareem Hunt turns into that again. We'll find out. But I think as it is, like what that roster is missing is that number one go-to guy. It's missing that first round talent outside of Chubb. And the only reason I'm even saying that with Chubb is because I just feel like when you look at what happened from week 10 on, you see all those targets disappear for him and you see him touching the football less. I just think that's a problem for me in fantasy. I'm not saying he's not going to rush for 1,200 yards again. He probably will, but I think that that's just where I would put it at.
Nick Chubb is going to rush for 1,500 yards. You hear it here.
I hope so.
I'm going to go a little bit different direction here. So this is like, you know, a 1960s year, like Impala lowrider type of car with like hydraulics, you know, where they do those competitions and stuff. But it has like bare tires and crappy rims, and you have the rims and the tires sitting in your garage. You just need to put them on the car. And that's like 1.03 and 1.04. And then maybe you have like, I don't know, some like a little bit of scrapes on the bumper because you're bouncing too much. That's kind of your tight end. You need to just replace or buff out those scrapes. So get two running backs in the draft. I would suggest Dobbins and Swift personally with those two picks. And then I think you're pretty golden moving on. I mean, you can buy you can try and get Ingram to kind of bolster those RBs until one of the rookies can hit. And you also need to get like a low value tight end that can tide you over for a couple years. Jared Cook. Like I said, Jack Doyle, get Jack Doyle, do it. And those types. And then you're going to be golden and you're going to be looking all shiny and new with those spinning rims and that hydraulic bounce and new bumper. And I love it.
Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today. That is going to be the conclusion of our show. But before we leave, really quickly, let me go ahead and turn this over to Joe. Say what you want to the people. tell them where they can find you. Tell them where they can find the Black Book.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. You know, I love you guys. It's fun. I like going on shows that are fun, and you guys are that, and you have good informed opinions, which doesn't hurt either. So I want to thank you guys first off for having me on talking football with me tonight. And you can go check out the Fantasy Football Black Book, number one bestseller in fantasy sports, and number one football book last summer as well. So we're going to hopefully approach that again as we hit July and August, but it's out there on Amazon right now. Some incredible contributors to the book. It's got relative position value. It's got minds like Elliot Crist and Adam Ronis and Mike Tagliere, myself, Nate Hamilton. It's just like Scott Bogman. The list goes on and on and on. We have some fantastic people working on that book. And it's basically that one book for all of your leagues, for all your formats, for your entire football season. We give it to you all in one spot there. And it's a game changer. So go get it. You can follow me on Twitter at JoePizzaPia17 and check me out on Fantasy Sports Today. 6 days a week, and Diamond Bets on Sundays over on Sports Grid, which is on Roku and all your streaming services. So again, boys, thanks for having me on. It was fun, and I look forward to chatting with you again this summer, man.
Yeah, man, we always have fun talking to you.
Yeah, don't wait a year to invite me. What the hell is that all about? I mean, come on, invite me again.
Listen, I get busy sometimes. I'm making new videos. I don't know if you saw the new wrestling video.
No, I didn't, but I got the wrestling podcast tomorrow. In the Fleet comes out tomorrow. What's your wrestling video?
I did the singlet last year.
No, I did not.
You do? Oh my God. What? Joe.
You wore the singlet?
Okay. Oh, you're going to have to, I'm going to send you links and you're going to have to watch.
Am I going to be able to sleep after you send me? All right.
No, you will not.
If you're okay with nightmares.
Not that I need to say this, but the Black Book is like a must buy. It's a must buy for any fantasy football, anything. I mean, like you said, it's literally every format you can think of. So go buy.
Yeah, we do NFFC, we do best ball. Again, there's standalone chapters for PPR, for Superflex, like what the player pool looks like, how to address it. And I think that's the problem is like there's too much vanilla coverage out there. It's just too general. Like you need to be hyper specific with a plan for all these different formats in this particular player pool, in this particular season of what's going on. And we update the cheat sheets every couple, weeks. I do the update and I send them to people when you purchase the cheat sheets separately. And, that's the other thing. Like you buy the magazine off the rack, that's not enough. And you know what? Like some of the analysis online is really good in some places, some podcasts really good too. But what's all missing is real strategy, and that's what relative position value does. It gives you a real way of looking at the board, and it always changes for the rest of your fantasy playing days how you approach formats and how you approach drafts and trades and managing rosters for the rest of your life, basically.
It's kind of like war for baseball, right?
It in a lot of ways, it is. It's like it's kind of like war, but in a way it's better because war is like above replacement of, there's 30 major league teams, right? But in what I do is, RB1 is a position, not RB, RB1. Why? Because all 12 teams in your league are probably going to have at least one RB1 on their team, most likely. So you have to compare them as a separate category because fantasy is about me outproducing you for as many spots as I can, as consistently as I can. And if I can stay above the fantasy league average and stay in the positive as opposed to the negative RPV at most positions, I'm going to have a better chance of doing that. And ultimately, I'm going to have more success. And it must be working, man, because we're number one every year and we're crushing it. And you know what? It's not because we have we're not the big box. We are not ESPN. We are not CBS. We are an independent publication showing you that you can go out there and you can kick everybody else's ass who's going getting all their fantasy news from places telling you about how Kalen Ballage is going to break through.
He's going to do it.
That was personal.
I see these things and like every year and I'm like, I just roll my eyes. I'm like, I don't understand. Like what we're doing. We're not helping people. I care more about your fantasy team than I care about mine. And that's the difference between me and a lot of other analysts out there. Like there's so many that care so much about their own ego, about being, look at me. I know this is going to like, no, just let's get you a championship. Cause if you're winning championships, then I'm winning championships. Cause you're buying the book every year.
I agree with that. I love it. Let's stop with the hot takes. You can say whatever you want, but once you put it down in print, man, actually let's put all hot takes in print and then they can actually be scrutinized and not argued about on Twitter.
We should. I don't have hot takes. I just call out receivers. My call out this year is Marquise Brown. Make of that what you will. But that is going to be the end of the show. Like I said, like 10 minutes ago, I just lied to you before. Thanks for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic popped it. Now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold. They just roll in a roll that I'm told. Comp a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks. Yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks. Yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats? Yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this? Is it that? Is it picks? Is it bad? Do I even have a chance? Do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic, gnostic.